Your Inevitable Unhappy Ending by Helen, read by Dodificus. The first time John thought Rodney was sexy, he'd just suffered a blow to the head, so he didn't give it much thought afterwards. Rodney's anxious face, the abrupt downward curves of his mouth, his shoulders, his hand brushing John's cheek just before John closed his eyes. The second time, Rodney was crouching next to him on the bottom of a boat, looping a tourniquet he'd made from his shirt tightly around Taylor's arm. "Will they cut it off?" she said, her voice a little slurred, imprecise. Ronan cut wide and swung past the big boats at the head of the harbour, rudder in one hand, gun in the other, spray flying over the bow and into their faces. "What? Of course not," Rodney said. He was breathing hard still, but his voice was unruffled and brisk. "Flesh wound." "When will we go home?" she said. "Soon," John said, while Rodney bundled what was left of his shirt into a pillow for her head. Blood was smeared on his hands and up his forearms, on the hilt of the knife John had tossed to him when they'd first lifted her into the boat, when Rodney had shoved off his vest and yanked his shirt off over his head without hesitation. He was wearing a thin undershirt. It was kind of tight across the chest, the sleeves and collar frayed and old, a small rip in the shoulder seam. "You okay?" John said. "Sure, sure," Rodney said. Ronan pressed the boat faster. Taylor took slow, careful breaths. Rodney scooped some water into his hands and rubbed at his arms, and John sat back against the edge of the boat and watched. The hollow of Rodney's throat, the stubble on his cheeks, the goosebumps rising on his upper arms. He didn't look away. The third time, he couldn't even see Rodney, and Rodney was talking, just talking, a low, unsteady hum in his earpiece. "You gonna freak out?" John had said, checking Rodney's air tank, the carefully looped knots in his harness. "Well, let's see," Rodney had said. "Obviously, I adore disarming bombs that have a fucking megaton of whatever radioactive waste the Genii have managed to get their hands on. And I've always felt that the only thing that could possibly make the experience more enjoyable would be if I were lucky enough to get to do it in an enclosed space under several hundred cubic feet of water. So, why on earth would I be freaking out?" "You're fine," John had said. Ronnie's hands looked a little shaky, but he'd nodded and let himself be lowered into the black water. That part was normal, regular, fine. They were alone on the far south side of the city, radio silence. Bates and Weir managing the evacuation. "Talk to me," John said. "I'm fine," Rodney said thinly, his voice a little too high. "You sound fine," John said, settling back against the wall. "Yeah, well, I am fine," Rodney said. He was breathing pretty heavily, but the underwater gear wasn't light, and the comm units tended to amplify that kind of thing anyhow. "You sound fine." "Yeah, I got it," Rodney said. "I know you're trying to help, but you're not. And it's really dark down here, and there are probably lamprey eels. Rodney's voice was crawling up the register, getting tighter and louder. And then there were a few underwater thumps and bangs, and Rodney sucked in his breath and stopped talking. "McKay," John said sharply, rolling to his knees. "Rodney, hey, are you..." "Fine, I'm fine," Rodney muttered. "Yeah, you're fine," John said. He was breathing hard himself, his heart racing, but he pitched his voice as low and slow as he could. "Yeah," Rodney said thoughtfully. John could almost see him pulling himself together. "Yeah, I'm good at bombs, actually, although I've always felt slightly bad about it. I'm actually a bit of a pacifist." "What? Really?" "Yes. Incredibly radical to think increasingly powerful weaponry might not quite be the answer to Earth's..." "Well, this was before I knew about the Stargate, and the incredibly powerful alien races that wanted to eat me, you understand. But yes, as a general rule, I'm against cruelty to animals and children, blanket bombing, nuclear power, and jaywalking. Oh, here it is, he said softly, and the fuzzy, blinking dot on John's life signs detector stood still. His voice was almost normal again. Funny how he never thought of Rodney as having an accent anymore, even with the way he chomped his consonants in the back of his mouth. Okay, Rodney said and sighed. Okay. Do you need help? I can handle it, Rodney said. I'm gonna just... His voice had gone a little fuzzily distracted, soft now, right in John's ear. Nothing he wasn't used to, nothing new. But it felt private. Just the two of them on the comm channel. The sound cranked up enough that it sounded like Rodney was mumbling his quiet thinking noises right against John's ear. Fuck, Rodney said. What? Fuck, nothing. I can fix it, Rodney said. If it's something you can't handle, if you need Zelenka, we can... I can handle it. Hush up for a minute, Rodney said, his voice clipped, precise, almost gentle, the way it got when he was concentrating on something else entirely. And John found himself sucking in heavy, confused breath, cheeks going hot. People made sex jokes about the comms all the time. You wear them all the time? Ronan had said, and John had lifted one eyebrow, just to make Private McAvoy, who was a sour, sad kid, crack up. Ford had thought, 1900 Atlantis jokes were the height of comedy, and that memory left a distractingly bitter taste in his mouth, enough to take his mind off Rodney. John smoothed his hands down his thighs, swallowed, and then said, Hey. Oh, come on, you bitch, Rodney said, exasperated, rough, rude. John bit the inside of his cheek in surprise. Rodney exhaled loudly and muttered something under his breath. Easy there, tiger, John said, forced himself to say, working to keep his voice light. His voice sounded weird to him, off, too serious. But Rodney just said, You know, this is actually one or two orders of magnitude more complex than just clipping the red wire. There isn't, in fact, a red wire. So if you could maybe hold that thought until I save us all from an ugly death. Fine, John said, and made sure to never, ever bring it up again. The fourth time, Rodney ran two fingers down the back of John's neck and into the collar of his shirt as they left the conference room. Tag sticking out, he said. Oh, John said. The fifth time didn't count, because everyone on M5X251 thought Rodney was sexy, possibly due to questionable airborne intoxicants. They'd been in the village for maybe 3 minutes when the first girl saw Rodney, flushed red, and ran across the cobblestone square and into a shop. What? I didn't do anything, Rodney said. Sure you didn't, John said, as the girl ran back out of the store with three others, all giggling and blushing and staring at Rodney. Huh, John said. If you think this is the first time a bunch of 10-year-old girls have thought I'm a figure of fun with absolutely no provocation, you're sadly mistaken, Rodney said. He stopped to take a breath, and another girl, this one older, perhaps 20, came out of the store and walked directly across the square towards Rodney. She was wearing a pale dress and sandals. Like almost everyone they'd seen, she had a lot of dark, glossy hair spilling down over her shoulders and was wildly, improbably, ridiculously lovely. She stepped around Ronan, ignored John, and stopped in front of Rodney. Rodney took a small step back. She smiled. Hello, Rodney said uncertainly. I'd like a kiss, if I may, she said. Rodney said. It is our custom, When such a one comes to our planet, she said. Ronan was staring at her, and then at Rodney in frank disbelief, but Taylor smiled. We know and honour this custom, she said, bowing slightly from the waist. We do, Rodney said. Sure do, John said firmly. Do we? It is a renewal ritual, Taylor said. When the right man comes to a village, any unmarried girl may beg a kiss. In return, visitors are given whatever it is that they require. Like Indigenous Nakwita? John said. Taylor inclined her head. Nice custom, Ronan said. I don't want to, Rodney said. Do I have to? Close your eyes and think of Atlantis, John said, unsympathetic. There were more girls now coming across the square in groups of two or three, arms linked, talking excitedly. The two nearest to John were tall and golden and smelled of flowers. Some of them are really young, Rodney said. I don't think... You must be of age to participate in the welcoming ritual, a girl broke in. She grinned at John, a little absently, her eyes already sliding past him towards Rodney. Rodney smiled stiffly. The next time you get chosen as a love slave by a priestess, I'm not rescuing you, he said. So it is settled, the first girl said. Come. They formed an impromptu parade through the streets, first just the four of them and the small crowd that had accumulated in the square, and then more and more people, spilling out of their houses, trailing behind them, laughing and talking. Someone began banging on a drum, and then there were lutes and tambourines as well, girls linking hands and weaving around them in complicated shapes. Above them, people threw open shutters and rained down red-petaled flowers on their heads. And by the time they got to the great hall at the top of the hill above the village, they were covered in petals, and Rodney was wearing a garland on his head, rakishly askew over his left eye. The girl from the square caught Rodney's hand and pulled him away from them, up onto a low dais at the front of the room. He cast one glance back over his shoulder, but went. There was a small mountain of red cushions on the dais, and she pulled at his hands until he sat down, clumsily. It was silent, great rafters soaring into darkness overhead, dust motes in the late afternoon sunbeams sliding across the floor. John could hear the girl next to him breathing, sharp, quick, quiet, as though she were holding herself still with some effort. The girl on the dais helped Rodney open his vest, slowly, their hands tangling together on the clasps as Rodney realized what she wanted. She was kneeling, leaning towards him, smiling slightly. Rodney licked his lips. John realized he was holding his breath and forced himself to stop. It wasn't a long kiss, but it wasn't exactly short either. Her hands were on his face, fingers curled around his jaw, one hand just cupping his cheek. No tongue. John could see Rodney's face clearly and his lips were barely open. But when she pulled back, she was trembling a little, eyes blurred and soft and satisfied. The hall exploded into cheers as she stood, people stamping their feet and shouting, grinning at each other. Someone pressed a goblet of something sweet and faintly alcoholic into John's hand and waved him towards a low table. Soon they were eating little bits of smoked meat with their fingers, drinking and watching Rodney kiss girl after girl after girl. He was nervous at first, obviously flustered. Holding the girls gingerly by their shoulders, his kisses brief and impersonal. But by the time their glasses had been refilled, Rodney was grinning, pressing his mouth softly against lush mouths, letting girls coil their arms around his neck, taking requests, kissing one girl on her throat, her head tossed back against the scarlet cushions, another high on the inside of her forearm, his mouth lingering. The girl flushed with daring, tracing her fingertips down his face. One girl stumbled after her kiss, standing up, and Ronnie caught her, said something that made her laugh, and she darted in and kissed him again, her mouth parting against his. John stared down at his drink. Taylor sighed next to him, smiling to herself. "What are you smiling about?" John said, wanting to be distracted. "I'm remembering my first kiss," she said, a little dreamily. "It was much as this." The sun had set when Rodney finally sat down next to them, his eyes dazed and happy. Taylor, who had been drinking all afternoon, laughed and then leaned over and kissed him, one lazy hand flung up over his shoulder. It looked like Rodney aimed for her cheek, but Taylor caught his jaw gently and met his lips with hers, her mouth open and gentle. There were still red petals caught in Rodney's hair. "This planet sucks," Ronan muttered next to him. "Right," John said. After that, he stopped keeping track. The fraternizing rule was a good rule that made a lot of sense, even if you were just stranded on an alien outpost with 250 people. And one day the Daedalus just stopped coming, so you were really trapped with the same 250 people. And then a few hundred odd other people whose planets you had fucked up by mistake, who might want to move in. And everyone else got to the hot, displaced alien princesses before you did because you were so busy jerking off over the way Rodney's pants fit across his thighs. He didn't say anything. They were frantically busy in the first months after the Daedalus, trying to keep everyone fed and clothed and alive, stepping up diplomatic missions, stockpiling weapons and food. They needed, Atlantis needed, Rodney. John couldn't let himself take the risk. He wouldn't see Rodney for days at a time, and then Rodney would burst into the briefing room, red-eyed from lack of sleep, his shirt untucked. It gut-punched him every time. Rodney's thick shoulders, the rough curves of his jaw. It was easy to imagine fucking Rodney, the way he'd groan and clutch at John's arms and be too bossy about the whole thing. It was easy to imagine the problems it would cause. John decided not to get obsessive and weird about it. It wasn't the first time he'd had an idiotic crush on a guy, but it was certainly the most inconvenient. Lucky, then, that Rodney never noticed, not even when John timed dinner for 2 months, so he could eat sitting across from Rodney. Not even when he found excuses to touch Rodney. Shoulder, elbow, chest once. Not even when he took Katie Brown on 4 dates and tried to fall in love with her because Rodney had liked her. Not even when he dated Miko for 5 weeks because he liked to hear her talk about Rodney. Rodney seemed to find it convenient that John was around the lab more. Then Miko dumped him because she said she just didn't feel a spark and began dating Lorne, who, after the first 3 weeks, walked around with an expression of stunned good fortune on his face. Rodney didn't notice that either. "What happened with Miko?" he said, easily a month after she had patted John's knee gently and left him sitting alone in his quarters. "We broke up," John said, not bothering to open his eyes. He was sprawled on the couch in a deserted common area, trying to summon up the strength to get up and go to bed. He spent the day sod-busting on the mainland. Without oxen, everyone had taken turns pulling it and guiding the ploughs and laughing at the Lanshan's slow progress and jagged, meandering rows. Ronan had been a natural, of course. John ached from his shins to his collarbones, a sharp weariness he knew would turn dull and unpleasant in the morning. There was a constellation of fat blisters on the palms of his hands. "You dumped Miko?" Rodney said, collapsing next to John on the couch and pulling his feet up on the table. "Are you aware that she won the Baxter Prize when she was 19? "So?" "So it seems incredibly unwise," Rodney said. "You're not going to find anyone who has a better grasp of unified harmonic theory than Miko." "She dumped me," John said. "They'd had sex 6 times. Nice sex. Good sex. and before that he'd gotten to make out with her on her narrow little bed, kiss her neck and take off her bra, and almost forget that he didn't know what the fuck he was doing dating her. Really? Maybe she found out that I didn't get unified harmonic theory, John said. He still hadn't opened his eyes, but he could feel Rodney breathing next to him. He'd been excused from farm duty, but he sounded tired anyway. Could be, Rodney said, yawning a little. He smelled good, warm. If someone's willing to sleep with me, I tend to overlook small defects like that. But Miko's more discerning about these things, Rodney said. She is, John said. Rodney tipped his head onto John's shoulder, and John felt his heart stutter, that this-is-it-now rhythm, and almost put his hand on Rodney's thigh, had his hand open, fingers grazing the warm material at Rodney's knee, before he realized that Rodney was asleep, breathing softly against his neck. Hey, John said, resignedly, trying to slide out from under him. It wasn't the first time it had happened. When he jerked off, he let himself think about cock. That was new, mostly. They kept the Stargate dark for weeks at a time, conserving what power they had for the shields. John spent as much time farming on the mainland as he did off-world. A bad sickness killed 14 of theirs and 20 Athosians. Elizabeth lost most of her left hand in a trade gone wrong. They ran out of sugar, out of Advil, out of uniform slowly. It stopped being strange to see Marines wearing badly laced, homespun Athosian shirts beneath worn tack vests on duty. Everyone lost weight. It was a bad year, a dark year. And having a harmless, pathetic fixation on Rodney McKay was John's one selfish bright spot. The Wraith came, of course, again and again that first year, on every world, but they won, mostly, every time. There were new ways to kill Wraith, and Rodney found new ways to hide, to blow hive ships out of the sky, gave them the means to build a life on Atlantis as best they could, and learned how to shoot, finally. P-90, M-9, the pulse weapons Ronan bargained for on PX-7593. Rodney always practiced late, after the beginning of second shift. And John found himself going by the shooting range on nights he knew Rodney would be finishing up. Pressing his lips together in concentration, his eyes like punched out holes in shadows. After, they'd sit out on balconies, even into winter, to look out over the ocean, alone in the dark. Still alive, Rodney said once. Damn right, John said. There was a girl in Birmingham he dated once, for a while, with the softest skin he'd ever touched. Dark, soft skin, big brown eyes, and she wasn't anything next to Rodney. Rodney's crack-knuckled hand nudging his, pass in the bottle of watered-down hooch they were sharing, the deep groove between his eyes, his weary face that meant they were alive, still. John made himself take it easy on spending time with Rodney, tried to limit the number of times he walked him to his quarters and didn't get asked to stay. He took the occasional hugs, though, after a close call, Rodney's body tight against his, one arm flung around John's back, his face against John's shoulders, their gear crushed between them. Rodney usually ruined it by hugging Taylor next. By the time spring rolled around, he had it mostly under control. Maybe he lay awake to hear Rodney breathe in the dark in the tent they shared on missions, or saved up the really good parts of the city he found to show Rodney first, like a gift. Maybe he couldn't eat for a week the time Rodney took a bullet in the chest, and Carson would admit how close he'd been to dying. And maybe he agreed so quickly, the time Rodney said he couldn't figure out why he wasn't getting laid, that Rodney assumed he was being made fun of, and snapped at him in wounded dignity. But no harm done. John slept hard at night and dreamt about bodies, danger, Wraith coming. The occasional dream where Rodney bent down over him, his face curious and happy, was welcome, even if it made John's chest ache a little in the morning. Sometimes, for fun, John tried to separate the people with the rare ability to tolerate Rodney from the people who actually enjoyed being ridiculed, interrupted, or briskly ignored. There weren't many. For a long time, in fact, it was just him. Then, John dropped by the lab, bored and out of sorts. He'd had the flu, flat on his back for a week, swim-headed and weak in the infirmary, his head aching too much to even read before Carson had let him out. He wasn't cleared for duty, his chest still hurt from coughing, and he was restless and irritated, and his defences were low, and Rodney was holding a baby against his chest with one arm, the palm of his hand curled protectively around her skull. Babies weren't fair, and also it wasn't the baby anyhow, because John wasn't a fucking girl. It was more that Rodney was waving a dry eraser marker at him and saying, "This thing is an unbelievable chick magnet. Did you know that?" It's not that I didn't understand in a purely academic way that women like babies, but good God. "Where did you get that?" John said. "Oh, someone left her around. Look, that's not the point." "Rodney, look at her," Rodney said, tipping her back handily so John could see her. John looked. It was a baby, rumpled around the edges, wearing a smock and a diaper, and only one sock. Her cheek flushed from being pressed against Rodney's chest. "It's a baby," he said. "Well, right. Obviously it doesn't work on you," Rodney said, sliding her securely back up his chest, rolling his eyes and scrawling a few calculations on the whiteboard. "But if we could get some women in here to demonstrate the process, I think you'd see that this thing is, in its essence, the A-bomb of dating." "Where's her other sock?" "Who cares?" Rodney said. "I changed her diaper earlier, and I thought Simpson was going to take me savagely on the floor of the lab." "That's great. I'm saying the animal tension was incredible," Rodney said happily. The baby made a contented burbling sound and fisted her hands in Rodney's shirt. They were in the big open-plan conference room. When John turned one way, he could see across the ocean clear out to the horizon. When he turned the other way, he saw Katie Brown almost walk into a wall because she was waving at Rodney's baby, making a cutesy little face. "That's it," John said, reaching for the baby. "Give me that." "Okay, but..." It was little and wiggly and damp and started to scream the minute John touched it. "What?" he said, staring at it, its crooked, vacant, watery eyes, the string of drools sliding down its chest, the thin tufts of hair on its head. "Give it," Rodney said, grabbing a little. "It's just for a week or so. There are some new refugees from P3X351. Her mother's sick. I graciously offered my time." "Graciously?" "That's right," Rodney said, rocking back smugly on his heels. The baby stuffed most of Rodney's collar in its mouth and let out several triumphant grunts. "Did that sound like she said Rodney to you?" Rodney said. "No," John said. "I don't think it's such a bad idea," Ronan said at lunch the next day. "Okay, what?" John waved his sandwich reprovingly. "Rodney with the baby defines bad idea." "I'm a wholesome influence," Rodney said. He was eating his sandwich with one hand and spooning applesauce into the baby's face at alarming speed with the other. "I'm exposing her to higher math and physics, and, yes, applesauce, yum, yum, yum. It'll give her an edge over..." "What did he give you?" John said, stabbing his fork at Ronan. "Nothing," Rodney said. "He let me borrow it to show Dr. Weir," Ronan said, sounding not even a little bit ashamed of being an idiot. She likes babies.
Yeah, I bet, John said.
Just because you don't like babies, Rodney began sanctimoniously.
I like babies, John said. I'm just not fucking...
Hey, no swearing, Rodney said, even though just that morning, John had seen him wearing the baby in a sling, fixing a puddle jumper with Zelenka, taking turns shouting fuck and Jesus fuck at each other. There weren't a lot of babies on Atlantis, not yet, although Zelenka's wife was pregnant, and John thought Miko was probably next. He'd already put in a few days looking for some kind of Atlantean preschool building, something like a christening gift for Zelenka and Premalo, who had come to Atlantis a year and a half ago in a beaten-up star cruiser with 75 people, all that was left of her planet. I heard you were taking in refugees, she had said, calm and tall and graceful on the landing pad, on the far pier of Atlantis. Even with her hands laced together on the top of her head, even though she smelled like someone who'd been trapped in a star cruiser built to accommodate 40 people for several weeks. Depends, John had said, holding his gun easy on her, Ronan a still menacing presence behind him. They had learned to be careful, finally. Everyone's saying it's the Millennium Falcon down here, Rodney had said, tumbling out of the transporter with Zelenka on his heels. Careful, John had said. Rodney had ignored him and walked over until he was standing in the shadow of the star cruiser, holding one hand up to shield his eyes from the sun.
What a... That flies, he said, squinting up at the patched hull, the black, half-corroded engines.
Got us here, she had said.
Through outer space? Rodney had said.
You must be hungry, Zelenka had said. Her eyes had been on John the entire time, wary, polite. But now her eyes flickered past him to Zelenka, a little startled.
I could eat, she had said,
even though her hands were still up on her head, her body rigid. She smiled, enough to show crooked teeth, lopsided smile in her long, grey face.
Here's the thing. I think I'm feeling a connection with this baby, Rodney said,
stumping busily through the hall with the baby tucked under one arm, a tablet in the other.
It's like nothing I've ever felt before.
No, John said. You don't even know what I'm going to say.
You're not allowed to steal someone's baby.
You don't understand, Rodney said. I can't go back. Maybe we could work out some kind of timeshare.
What? Are you insane?
John, babies are magic, Rodney said gravely, and then stepped into a transporter and disappeared before John could do anything constructive, like call the authorities or punch him in the face.
You're going to have to confiscate that baby, John said, sliding in next to Elizabeth at dinner.
Why's that?
He's incredibly good with her, Elizabeth said, staring across the mess hall to Rodney's table, where he was sitting, surrounded by women, 8 doctorates, 3 unblemished mission records, 2 All-Atlantis ping-pong championships between them, all fondly watching Rodney coax the baby into eating a spoonful of mashed vegetables.
I never even knew Rodney liked kids, Elizabeth said thoughtfully. She was still staring, picking absently at a corn muffin.
He doesn't, John said. He's using them to meet girls.
Oh, I think that's a little far-fetched, John, Elizabeth said. He's been very accommodating about disrupting his schedule.
Oh, good Christ, not you too, John said.
What? You think Rodney's adorable and sweet because of that baby, John said. He had never even once considered, before this moment, that women might be unfit to hold command posts.
Don't be ridiculous. Rodney is the same abrasive, difficult member of our team he's always been, she said, but her heart wasn't in it, She was too busy watching Rodney play puddle jumper goes through the gate with the baby carrot. Elizabeth smiled, cradling her cheek in her good hand. John noticed Ronan standing frozen at the end of the food line, looking first at Rodney and then at Elizabeth, and smirked maliciously at him. "Have you seen Rodney with that baby?" he said to Cadman when she was teaching him how to rig a door to explode. "Yeah, so," she said, handing him a pair of pliers. "Thank you," he said. "Exactly." "He's completely desperate," she said. "But cut him some slack. He's not like you." "Oh," John said. "That's how?" "You know, loner," she said carelessly. "That's me," John said. He held the pliers in his teeth and fumbled through the duffel bag for the timer. "You should really consider," Cadman began. She looked a little serious. Or maybe she always looked serious. She'd liked to laugh before. "What?" Cadman sighed and reached across him. "You should... Why did you wire up the detonator that way?" "It's the same as yours." "Same as mine, and yet completely wrong," she said. "At least you can run pretty fast."